Chapter 42. Ron assumes I'm shaking from the temperature. He grabs a blanket from the trunk and wraps it around me like a burrito. He eases me into the car before clicking my seatbelt. We speed away. "I'll drive wherever you want to go," he says. "Home? Sugar Island? June Chippeways?" "Home," I say without hesitation. For once, I don't want to be anywhere else. "If you're able to tell me, I'd like to know what happened between you and Jamie tonight," Ron says, turning into my driveway. Mom left the entry light on. I remain seated, sitting with him as the car idles. It feels familiar, comforting, even. Like when Coach Bobby drove me home after away games. I have to expect my mother to check on us. Why am I upset with Jamie but not with senior agent Ron for putting me in danger? A hypothetical that became very real tonight? Ron's focus has always been on the investigation. He's kind to me. I'm a helpful CI. But when this investigation is over, Ron will get up the following day and open the next case file. His professional compass always points north. At the first sign of an issue, he'll recalibrate to stay focused on the mission. Jamie made me feel like I might be more important to him than the job. There's a story about Original Man, who was given the name Anishinaabe. He was on a journey to find his parents and twin brother, but became distracted by a beautiful song in the east. Maybe that's what Ron observed. The reason why Jamie might not be cut out for undercover work. Jamie isn't good at recalibrating. I confronted Jamie about the fake relationship being his idea from the start and may have broken his nose. My second punch missed completely, and that's when you showed up. I add for clarification, it was a one-sided fight. Ron takes a minute to gather his thoughts. He's had two undercover assignments. First one leaves him with a scar, now a broken nose. His face is literally a roadmap of bad decisions. With a slow shaking of his head, he adds, "That guy better make a career change before he ends up looking like Quasimodo." I surprise myself by laughing, then snort while attempting to rein it in. Ron joins in and I lose it completely. Our belly laughs fill the car as I wipe tears from my eyes. Finally, I say goodnight. Ron waits until I unlock the front door and wave to him before he backs out of the driveway. I brace myself for Mom wanting a Shagala recap, but the house is quiet. She left a note next to the key dish. "I'm sleeping at the big house tonight. Hope you and Jamie had a nice night. See you tomorrow after Mass. Love you, Mom." She hasn't stayed overnight at the big house since Grand Mary's stroke. Why tonight? Unless Mom was giving me privacy? Did she think I'd invite Jamie inside? Maybe Mom, who had to sneak around with my dad, wants to be supportive in a way her parents never were. I get ready for bed and lie under my comforter, exhausted but unable to settle myself. Instead of reciting the periodic table of elements, I reach for the choker still around my neck. My fingers touch each bead as if it were Grand Mary's rosary. Instead of a Hail Mary or Our Father, I say my spirit name, the name that begins my prayers to Creator, the name I will only reveal to someone worthy of me. The strange day leaves me before I reach the end of the choker. Travis stares at Lily on the ground before returning to me. "They're so mad at me," he whispers. "The little people. I just wanted her to love me again. She's the only person who ever loved me, believed me when everyone else ditched me. If only she just tried it, Donnie. But she wouldn't. I added it to my cookies. She didn't want those either. This was the only way." He raises the gun to his temple. My eyes squeeze shut to make this all go away. The words he is saying now. "The whole town wrote me off when I said I shot that BB gun. Glass nicked that lady's eye, damaged her cornea. One more person sacrificed to the hockey god. Levi swore he'd be so grateful if I said it was me. He was the only freshman hockey player to make the varsity team. Everyone loved him. On the ice, off the ice, on the res, in town. Levi was supposed to be the best of us. I said okay. I told Coach Bobby it was me. Lily believed me when I told her the truth. She just couldn't hurt you with it. She's the best. Don't you see? I had to take her with me. I opened my eyes in time to see his head snap sideways. One hand touches my choker while the other muffles my sobs. I stay like that until Zagasikwe dutifully lifts the sun to begin another day. When sunlight fills my bedroom, my eyes are drawn to the red outfit draped over the desk chair. I never want to see it again. Instead, I focus on the gift-wrapped box on the desk. Green metallic gift wrap, silver ribbon and bow atop the shoebox-sized present. I left a surprise at your house. Levi's whisper brings back the incandescent glow on his face as I kissed Dad's choker and raised it during the honor beats. My fingers flutter at my neck. Each bead is a memory from last night. Jamie, Brant Edwards, TJ, Stormy, Macy, Ron, and Travis. Levi was supposed to be the best of us. I bring the gift back to bed, where I unwrap the shiny package. It's a framed picture of Levi, Dad, and me. As I pore over it, I feel the stretch of my wide smile. My brother and I each sit on a knee. Dad has an arm around each of us. Levi and I are 4 years old. My smile is a copy of Dad's. Levi's face is his mother's, but the laughter in our eyes is the same. Levi swore he'd be so grateful if I said it was me. Everyone loved him, on the ice, off the ice. I love my brother. But what if he is less than who I thought he was? I dress in my running clothes, leggings and layers of shirts beneath a hoodie. My morning prayer begins with my spirit name, my clan, and where I am from. Which of the seven grandfathers should I include? What if I ask for something I shouldn't? I could be a bird asking Creator for love, only to be so enamored of my new mate that I fly into a clean window and break my neck. Everything has strings attached, unintended consequences, the shove from behind that you never saw coming. Flakes of Sema flutter from my trembling hand. My prayer ends with a confession. I'm scared. I run as if chased by something menacing, hot breath at the nape of my neck. It isn't until I reach the wooded lot that I take in my surroundings. Sugar Island across the river, the grass still flattened from the Jeep tires. 2 days ago, I was happy, kissing Jamie, sharing myself with him. It seems a lifetime ago. Yesterday, my brother was on top of the world. Team captain, hockey god, the prince of Shagala, the pride of Sault Ste. Marie and Sugar Island. TJ called him Golden Boy. What if the terrible things about Levi are true? Creator, I can't take any more. I just want to be a clueless girl living in her own bubble. Retracing my steps, I jog back. My pace slows the closer I get to home, exhausted and with dread growing inside me. Mom hasn't returned from Sunday Mass yet. A hot bath might ease the tension throughout my body. While waiting for the water to fill the deep soaking tub, I go to my bedroom and stare at my laptop. It's October 3rd. The bank lady said monthly statements are sent after the first of the month. Of course, maybe they wait until the following business day and September's bank statement won't show up till tomorrow. All I have to do is check for an email from the bank in Canada. If it's not there, I can soak until my fingers are pruny before getting on with the rest of my day. And if it is there, I want it to confirm Levi's explanation about investing in land near Searchmont. Because, just like with Uncle David, I've allowed a tiny seed of doubt to germinate. I hold my breath while logging into my email account. It arrived Friday afternoon, right after Mrs. Bonacera's email titled, "Read this to your mother." Mrs. B always sends medical journal articles pertaining to Grand Mary's condition. I'm supposed to translate them for Mom. I click on the attached bank statement. The starting and ending balances for September are what the bank lady told me on the phone. $10,856.77. But over the course of the month, my brother deposited $20,000 and then wired it to a bank in Panama. My heart breaks with a thud. Levi is the mule. The water drains from the tub. I don't remember changing my mind about taking a bath. Levi is the mule. I stare into the vanity mirror. Questions multiply exponentially in my mind. Grabbing a hold of one question to steady myself, I ask my reflection, "For how long?" I halt at the painted brick house with its indigo shutters and the studio apartment over the two-car garage. The driveway is empty. I peek in the garage window. It's empty. Dana Firekeeper always stays at the Superior Shores Resort for the entire Shagala weekend. Levi and Stormy should be at Mike's parent-free house. The back entrance to the garage is unlocked. I enter, and Waylon growls from behind a door leading to the house. When I call his name, his tone changes from protector to friend. A set of narrow stairs at the farthest garage stall leads to a second entrance to Levi's room. I try the door. Locked. Figured as much. I stand in the backyard, looking up at the three dormer windows above the garage. My empty stomach somersaults. I shiver from hot skin gone clammy in the crisp October morning. The spare key is still kept underneath a garden gnome figurine in the flower bed next to the back entrance. I unlock the door and return the key to its hiding spot. When I enter the house, Waylon drops a stuffed bear at my feet. I toss his toy and the German Shepherd dashes down the hallway. Levi's school pictures run the length of the stairwell, beginning with his brand new senior portrait. My brother becomes younger with each step. Middle school photos show a confident preteen with zero awkwardness. His charming smile never changes, but his face softens during his elementary school years. At the top of the stairs, he is a round, sweet, 3-year-old preschooler. Waylon nudges my hand with his toy. I fling the bear, which lands in front of senior year Levi. French doors at the top of the stairs open to a small wrought iron balcony overlooking the wooded backyard. The stair landing leads either to the main house or to the garage apartment. I try the door to Levi's space, also locked. I take a deep breath and blow it out in an exaggerated sigh. A few years ago, I watched my brother break into his bedroom. He had lost his key and Dana hadn't hidden the spare yet. Stormy, Mike, Travis, and I were in the backyard, watching Levi scale the trellises framing the back entrance to reach the balcony. Mike led us in chants of Spider-Man to cheer on Levi as my brother jumped to the garage roof and slid open a dormer window. As with everything, he made it look effortless. Waylon races up the stairs to join me. I wrestle the slobber damp bear and throw it back to senior year Levi. It feels like a race between the dog and me. Who can reach our goal first? I turn the handle on one of the French doors and step onto the shallow balcony. I shut the door behind me. My fatigued quads twitch in anticipation and I hear the guy shouting, "Spider-Man!" I only have time for two deep breaths before I jump the short distance to the garage roof. I land on all fours, my shoulders screaming in protest. The peak of the roof didn't seem this steep from the ground or in my memories. The instant I tell myself not to look down, I do, and I feel an urge to pee myself. This was stupid. Does it really matter how long Levi's been distributing meth? What more proof do I want? Waylon barks from the other side of the French doors, as if agreeing. I force my breath to slow down and lie there until my heartbeat matches. Moving sideways in tiny increments, I reach the nearest window. When I looked up at the windows, each was open slightly to let in fresh air. Dana blasts the heat like a sweat lodge from October through April. She doesn't care how high their heat bills run. Levi will never wake up shivering. My heart beats double time as I pry the screen from the window. The plan, which I'm making up as I go along, is to put the screen back once I'm inside the room. The screen takes more effort, coming loose all at once. I teeter off balance, dropping the screen. I grip the windowsill. The screen hits the fieldstone patio below, and I register the time it took to reach the ground. If I fall off the roof, it will take approximately 2 seconds until I splat. I push the window up until I can fit through the opening. I land clumsily inside while Waylon barks from outside Levi's bedroom door. I stand. Now what? I start with the nightstand beside the queen-sized platform bed. Next to the lamp is a large bottle of ultra-moisturizing hand lotion and a box of tissues. Gross. I brace myself. Searching my brother's bedroom means I can't ever unsee stuff. Moving to Levi's desk and dresser, I go through every drawer in the bedroom. I pull out each one to look underneath and behind for any secret documents. Levi doesn't have a wall of bookcases, like Mike, just a set of bunk beds along one wall. The bedding on the lower bunk is messy. Stormy sleeps there, further confirmed by a half-empty bag of Cheetos within reach on the floor. The top bunk is perfectly made, as if made by someone in boot camp. Mike stays over, though less frequently than Stormy. I look under each mattress, careful to leave each in its pre-search state. Outside the door, Waylon paws at the door, reminding me he still wants to play. An enormous plasma screen takes up the wall above a rectangular coffee table with precise stacks of video games next to Levi's PlayStation 2 and Mike's Xbox. Facing the screen are a trio of video gaming chairs, low to the floor like a cross between beanbag chairs and children's car seats. A fourth chair is banished to a corner, Travis's chair. But maybe Levi will let Jamie be their fourth. I slide the closet door open to view half of the contents, clothing, shoes, and plastic totes filled with hockey gear. I quickly go through each box. Most are filled with hockey tournament program booklets, hockey magazines, and hockey playbook drawings on graph paper, X's and O's in formations with dotted lines. This is stupid. What am I doing here? I am sweating from the heat and understand Levi's need to keep windows open. A glance out the screenless window reveals a squirrel squawking from a nearby tree, also agreeing with my stupidity. Returning to the closet, I move on to the other side, where my brother keeps his clothes. The shelf above has smaller boxes and a black ash basket. I go in order. There is a shoebox, the same brand as the one Levi wrapped Dad's choker in. Inside are bank statements from our joint account. He hasn't received the statement from September yet, so I start with August. I check the beginning and ending balances before eyeballing the activity during the month. He wired $10,000 to the same bank in Panama, the month when Lily was killed. I go through July's statement, another wire transfer, and again for June and May. In April, the amount wired was $15,000. It was $20,000 per month for March, February, and January. In 2003, he wired the same amount for December, November, and October. Hockey season runs mid-September through mid-April. He wired more money in hockey months, but he was still running money through our account during non-hockey months. How could he be a meth mule year-round? Is that why he's always using Dana's boat for trips to Mackinac Island in the summer? There was no unusual activity in September 2003. It was a partial hockey month, but the statement shows nothing but normal purchases at stores at the mall across the river. Same for the summer months before that. What was so special about October last year? Why did Levi start being a meth mule then? The common sense realization comes far later than it should. The wire transfers began when Levi became a soup. But how could a minor authorize wire transfers from a Canadian bank to one in Panama? Levi was a junior when he made the team. He wouldn't turn 18 until January. Meanwhile, I was a senior, turned 18 in October, and my brother was a minor. I wasn't. I am frozen on the floor next to the shoebox. More than a year of bank statements are laid out around me. Could Levi have made the wire transfers in my name? The floor rumbles as the garage door rises. Waylon rushes downstairs, barking. Someone is home.